Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast.
We are one church that meets in various locations across Greater Manchester.
For more information about who we are or where we meet,
please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
How do you respond to success? There are many different ways that people do respond. Some people in life are prone to negative thinking, where they're thinking about problems all the time, and as soon as they see success in one area, they just jump to thinking about the next problem without giving any space to celebrate the success that has just been achieved. Some people actually love the chase more than the catch. They get very caught up in the journey to success and get more attached to that journey than the destination that they're actually trying to reach. They like challenge for the sake of challenge. Other people get really high off any success they achieve and let it go to their head. And in our social media dominated world, a lot of us are used to seeing these posts where people brag about their successes and achievements and broadcast that to everyone. And there's often a lot of attention that goes to people's achievements and a lot of glorying in them. But we have been working through the book of Nehemiah here at our morning service, and we've reached a point in the narrative where a major victory has been achieved, and we're going to see quite a wise response to this success. So as a recap, we've been looking at how Jerusalem's walls have been broken down. Jerusalem has been left in ruins because of the way the Babylonian Empire had invaded and taken the people into exile. But there was a man named Nehemiah who God had stirred up to initiate this rebuilding of Jerusalem's walls as part of that process of the city being restored. God's gracious hand had clearly been upon Nehemiah in his efforts, but Nehemiah had been facing significant opposition, and the journey to rebuild these walls was not in any way smooth. But now, after many struggles, we're at a point in the narrative where the wall has been rebuilt. And you might wonder what the big deal is about the wall. But the thing is, historically, city walls symbolise security, safety and protection for the city. So this was a significant success for Jerusalem. And we're going to see what the people do with that success. I'm going to read our passage for today, which should come up on the screen behind me. It's Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 15 to chapter 7, verse 4. So the wall was completed on the 25th of the month Elul, in 52 days, when all our enemies heard about it, and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence, for they realized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. Also in those days, many letters went from the nobles of Judah to Tobiah, and Tobiah's letters came to them. For many in Judah were bound by oath to him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah, and his son Jehohanan, that's a nightmare to say, had married the daughter of Meshullam, the son of Berechiah. Moreover, they were speaking about his good deeds in my presence and were reporting my words to him. Then Tobiah sent letters to frighten me. Now when the wall was rebuilt and I had installed the doors and the gatekeepers, the singers and the Levites were appointed, then I put Hanani, my brother, and Hananiah, the commander of the citadel, in charge of Jerusalem. For he was a faithful man and feared God more than many. Then I said to them, the gates of Jerusalem are not to be opened until the sun is hot. And while they are standing guards, the gatekeepers are to keep the doors shut and bolted. Also appoint guards from the inhabitants of Jerusalem, each at his post and each in front of his own house. Now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few and the houses were not built. So I've got three main points from this passage that I want to look at today. First point is how God will fulfill his purposes. Next point is how we have a choice whether we're part of God's purposes. And the final point is that our purpose is worship. So the first point, God will fulfill his purposes. So as we can see in this passage, the wall has now been completed after 52 days of work, which seems like a pretty impressive turnaround to me. And the thing is, what seems like it was key to this success on a practical level was not necessarily a select group of people being exceptionally skilled or efficient, but the way that the people as a whole came together and combined their individual efforts behind this common cause of restoring Jerusalem, each individual doing what they could within their sphere of influence. We read about this back in chapter 3, how many different people got to work on repairing a different part of the wall. Some even just working on the small part of the wall that was closest to them. But everyone was doing their bit. People completed the work despite the opposition that they were facing. There's a guy called Derek Kidner that says, "The operation was throughout a triumph of concentration amidst every kind of distraction." So the people had risen above this distraction and opposition. On a practical level, the way that the people really pulled together was significant to the success. But on a deeper level, it's clear that it was actually God and God's gracious hand that brought about the success. It wouldn't have happened without him. Verse 16 of chapter 6 tells us that the surrounding nations lost their confidence because they realized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. This was a key ingredient that brought about the success in the building efforts. God's blessing, his help, his gracious hand. And the reason God brought about this success is because he's faithful. He'll do what he says he'll do. The main message through the book of Nehemiah, more than anything else, is ultimately that God keeps his promises, even when it looks impossible that they could be fulfilled. There'd been a lot of opposition to the rebuilding that was seen throughout this book as a whole. And the people had mocked and ridiculed the attempts to rebuild. But at the heart of God's character is that he's a promise-keeping God, even when all the odds are stacked against the promises being fulfilled. Because what is impossible with people is possible with God. And we see this pattern right through the Bible of God making promises that you'd never think could be fulfilled and fulfilling them in remarkable ways. A great example of this is back in the book of Genesis when God made his promise to Abraham and Sarah, who were an elderly couple with no children, well past the age of having children. But God promised that he would give Abraham as many descendants as the stars in the sky. And the fulfillment of that promise seems so unlikely that when Abraham and Sarah were promised a child by God, Sarah just laughed. And that's a natural reaction in many ways. And perhaps that's similar to the way that many people in Nehemiah's time were laughing at the attempts to rebuild the walls because it just seemed so unlikely. But God's promise to Abraham and Sarah was fulfilled. Sarah gave birth to a son called Isaac. And it was promised that through Isaac's descendants, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And through Isaac came Jacob, and then from Jacob came all the tribes of the ancient Israelites. God keeps his promises and fulfills his purposes. And it was God's grace and faithfulness that ultimately brought about the success in the rebuilding of Jerusalem's walls. Just as it was God's grace and faithfulness that gave Abraham and Sarah their son, Isaac. And the walls being rebuilt was part of the bigger picture of God's purposes to redeem humanity through Jesus Christ. Jerusalem was the capital city for the people of Judah. It was a source of strength for them. And a capital city has the power to bind a nation together and preserve them. So Jerusalem was integral to the people of Judah being preserved. And in preserving the people of Judah, God was actually preparing the way for Jesus to enter the world. Because Jesus would eventually be born into the world as a descendant of Judah. And he would suffer on behalf of humanity as a whole by dying, by being nailed to a tree, so that whoever has faith in Jesus can be justified, put right, and accepted before God. And it might seem like that's not very relevant to our passage in Nehemiah, but the reality is that God's plan to redeem and restore humanity through Jesus Christ is a big picture that the whole Bible fits into. So it was ultimately God that had brought about this success through Nehemiah's leadership of the walls being built. And we see this through God's faithfulness to the people of Judah and his grace towards humanity as a whole. And we see how the rebuilding of the walls and the strengthening of the people of Judah wasn't just about Judah's immediate physical protection, but about the hope that was to come into the world for all humanity through Christ. No matter what the circumstances look like, God's promises will be fulfilled and his purposes will come about because he is sovereign, all-powerful, trustworthy and reliable. The Bible is a rich storehouse of powerful promises that can truly transform us. Maybe as we go out from today, we can spend some time in our own lives digging into the Bible and taking hold of the powerful promises God has made, because God is trustworthy and he will fulfill his promises and his purposes. Now, the next point is that we have a choice whether we're part of God's purposes. So no matter what the circumstances look like and no matter what we do, God's purposes will come about. They can't be stopped. But from our part, we have a choice whether we're part of those purposes or not. The walls of Jerusalem were rebuilt because God is faithful to his people and his gracious hand was on Nehemiah. But the people had a choice whether or not they would participate in God's purposes and join in that work, or whether they would just be apathetic about God's purposes or even try and oppose God's purposes. Tobiah, that we read about, has clearly tried to oppose God's purposes. At the start of chapter 4, we read how Tobiah was one of the people that was mocking the attempts to rebuild. And earlier in chapter 6, he'd hired a false prophet to try and manipulate Nehemiah. And now in our passage, we see that Tobiah is exerting a lot of influence over the nobles of Judah, as well as sending these letters in an attempt to intimidate Nehemiah. So this Tobiah bloke just seems like bad news. He seems very sly and he seems to have this insidious influence. He doesn't seem like he's someone who's directly running in and physically attacking Nehemiah, but someone who is stirring things up from behind the scenes. It might just be me, but I get the vibe that Tobiah's a bit like that bloke. Might be a picture. Grima Wormtongue from Lord of the Rings, you know, moving toward the people with power and influence and manipulating him. That's how I picture Tobiah in my head anyway. Tom Sellens spoke about this the other week, but what made Tobiah's opposition and influence quite insidious was the fact that you would have expected Tobiah to be on board with the vision that God had given to Nehemiah. Because it seems that Tobiah was Jewish himself. He wasn't from another people group. And even if Tobiah was not genuinely living out his faith, he was at least a nominal follower of God. We can see that in the fact that he'd named his son Jehohanan, which means Yahweh has shown mercy. So he at least had ties to the people of Judah. And Tobiah had a lot of influence because he was, through marriage, related to a lot of influential people in Judah. And we're told that many people were under oath to him and had this fondness for him, seen in the fact that they were speaking about his good deeds. So Tobiah had quite a bit of sway over the social and political dynamics in Judah. On one level, we can see Tobiah as one of the main antagonists of this book. And in a lot of ways, he was a serious threat to Nehemiah. But when we put all of Tobiah's actions into the bigger picture, the bigger context of God being sovereign, all-powerful and faithful, we know that Tobiah's actions were really no threat to God's plan. So ultimately, Tobiah is quite a sad case. He's harming himself more than he's harming anyone else. He's certainly not able to take down God's purposes. But what he is doing is cutting himself out of God's purposes by standing against them. And as he does this, he seems to go from bad to worse. You know, he begins by mocking Nehemiah. Then he tries to manipulate Nehemiah. And now he's at this point where he's trying to intimidate Nehemiah by sending these letters. And at this point in the narrative, we've been told in verse 16 that the enemies of those rebuilding the wall have started to lose their confidence because they can tell that it's God that is bringing about this success for Nehemiah. So it seems like there's something of a desperation in Tobias' actions. He knows God has been behind these efforts to rebuild the wall and is seeing how the efforts have come to fruition now that the wall has been completed. So all there is left for him to do is to try and intimidate Nehemiah as an individual. His actions seem quite desperate, bitter, and vindictive. His efforts to oppose the rebuilding have failed because God is all-powerful. So now, despite the influence he has among the nobles, all he's achieved for himself is bitterness and negativity. Maybe we can think of people like Tobiah in this day and age, people who are firmly standing against God's work, trying to cause God's purposes to fail. Maybe we can think of people who fiercely mock what we believe in and effort to make us think our faith is foolish nonsense, or people who isolate us and ostracize us because we hold different beliefs to them. Or on a more intense, direct level, there are many parts of the world where it's incredibly difficult and dangerous to be a Christian because of real persecution that tries to stamp out any hint of Christian influence. And as painful and as difficult as many of these circumstances are, we can rest assured by reminding ourselves of certain truths. We can look back to what happened in Nehemiah's day and how the walls were rebuilt to see how God's purposes will always overcome any human opposition that there is. On a big picture level, we can look to the fact that our own sin and corruption has always ultimately been our greatest opposition that we've had to deal with. But even that has been ultimately overcome and defeated by God's purposes, because God was faithful to fulfill his promise to bring blessing and redemption to every nation through Jesus Christ. When we remind ourselves of that, that God will certainly fulfill his purposes, we put any opposition that we face in its proper perspective. But we don't only see direct opposition to God's purposes in this passage. We also see the passivity of some people. We're told how the nobles of Judah are in this dialogue with Tobiah, writing letters to him and getting letters back. And maybe they weren't actively working to bring Nehemiah down like Tobiah was, but they were in relationship with Tobiah and likely tolerating what he was doing. Throughout Nehemiah, it seems that some of the nobles had held to this kind of passive approach to God's work as the wall was being rebuilt. Back in chapter 3, we read about how some of the nobles were not putting their shoulders to the work. They weren't mucking in, as one translation says. And maybe the nobles weren't directly opposing God's work, but what stands out is that they weren't all in. And I think that's a challenge to us. Are we all in for God's work? Are we throwing ourselves behind it? I know myself that I can be so easily distracted from God's work and I can be dragged away from being all in, red hot for God. But if we pour ourselves out for God, for his work and his purposes, we won't be disappointed. We'll be more deeply satisfied than we could ever be by any distraction that there is. Now, the next point is that our purpose is to worship. The thing is, we are made to worship, and worship is about giving every part of our lives to God. In Romans 12, verse 1, Paul writes, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship." It's about putting God at the center of everything, depending on him in successes and failures. The thing is, sometimes it can actually be harder to depend on God when things are going well compared to when we're in difficult times. In my own life, I've definitely seen this with how I pray. In theory and in principle, I know it's important and valuable to be praying for the people in my life, that God would be at work in their lives, that they would know his presence. But in reality, I can see that when I've known of a serious, difficult situation, whether it's to do with health or relationship issues in someone's life, I've often jumped into prayer mode. But then when one of these difficult situations isn't there, I've not always had the same habits of prayer for my friends or family members. where things are going well and when we see success, there's a temptation to stop depending on God in the same way that we might when the hard times are there. Now that Jerusalem's walls have been rebuilt and there's been success, it might have been tempting for Nehemiah to just glory in his own success, to boast in the achievement, to trust in his own strength. Could have been tempting for him to gloat in how inspiring his leadership was, how efficient his administration was, how great his persistence was. But he doesn't. He clearly acknowledges that God's grace and faithfulness are the source of the success behind the rebuilding efforts. And from this place, he lays a foundation of worship, of devotion to God. Jerusalem itself was always meant to be a city of worship. So when Nehemiah is putting structures in place to move the city forward, he doesn't just focus on social, military, or economic factors. He recognizes the importance of spiritual leaders. You could even say of worship leaders, Dan. And verse 1 of chapter 7 tells us that it's not just doors and gatekeepers that are put in place. It's singers and Levites. Now, Levites were the priestly tribe that had specific spiritual duties, and the singers were being appointed for praise and worship. And by prioritizing these spiritual leaders, as he starts to get Jerusalem up and running again, Nehemiah is making it clear that Jerusalem exists to worship God. We can also see Nehemiah's heart of worship in the qualities that he looks for in the political leaders that he puts in place. We see this in verse 2, when Nehemiah puts Hanani and Hananiah in charge of Jerusalem. And Hanani is actually someone we've already met in this story. We met him back in chapter 1 at the start of this book, because it was him that visited Nehemiah when Nehemiah was still in Susa in modern-day Iran. Nehemiah was 1,000 miles away from Jerusalem, and Hanani came to him to give him a report about the dire situation in Jerusalem. And he deeply cared about this himself. And in sharing this report with Nehemiah back then, he had played a key role in stirring Nehemiah up to action. So in appointing Hanani, Nehemiah was appointing someone that he could be confident was behind the vision that God had given them for Jerusalem. And the other person that Nehemiah puts in charge, Hananiah, was clearly already a competent and qualified guy, because he was already the commander of the citadel. But it seems that the main reason that Nehemiah appointed Hananiah was not his competency, but his character. What verse 2 says about Hananiah can be translated in different ways. The NIV says he's appointed because he's a man of integrity. The NASB says it's because he was faithful. And the Hebrew word that's being translated there as integrity or faithfulness is emet. And that can mean faithful, but it can also mean firmness. I think firmness really gets the point across. Hananiah was someone who was solid. He wasn't flaky and unreliable. He was steady, stable, and trustworthy. But this passage then tells us that Hananiah feared God more than many. Ultimately, that reverence that he had for God was the source of his integrity, his firmness, and his trustworthiness. So in valuing these spiritual leaders, the singers and the Levites, and appointing these leaders who were behind the vision that God had for Jerusalem, Nehemiah was building the city, not just in a physical way, but in a spiritual way, on the right foundations. And in doing this, Nehemiah himself is worshipping God. So at this point in the narrative, we've seen a great success that's seriously worth celebrating. But we see that we're called to recognize that any success we do experience has only come about by God's grace. And then from that place, we're to dedicate that success itself to God, to use it for his purposes and build on the right foundations. For some of us, I think the main thing to take away might be the truth that God will always fulfill his purposes and keep his promises, no matter how unlikely that seems. Let's allow that truth to shape us so that we can go forward into whatever circumstances we're facing with a confidence from God. For others of us, maybe the main challenge from this passage is to wholeheartedly worship God in every part of our lives, to not be passive about God's work in the world, but to delight in what God is doing and to joyfully partner with God in the work that he's doing to reach this broken world, to reach it with his redemption and hope. Maybe there's a particular passion to see change or breakthrough in a certain context that God has put within you that's actually been buried within you. Maybe you can start to step into that and pursue that passion and think what it might look like to pursue God's breakthrough in that area.
Thanks for listening.
To explore this sermon or learn more about our church, please navigate to the links provided in this podcast description.
From there, you can connect with us on social media, and you're welcome to check out the music links featured in this episode from our very own musicians.
You can also discover current events and information about where we meet on Sundays and various groups or community projects that you can join in with.
If you're interested in knowing more about us or wish to join us for one of our meetings, please reach out.
Simply drop us an email at hello@ccm.org.uk.
We look forward to connecting with you.